Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Patty Holstrand, and this is KWOD Radio. I am on live today with John Chinahetti from Wizards of the Coast. We're so happy to have him here today. John is a senior creative director for Dungeons & Dragons with Wizards of the Coast Hasbro since 2007. He will also be the art industry guest of honor at LeprechaunCon 39 this year, over Mother's Day weekend, May 9th through 12th. John has provided art direction, graphic design, management of various art-related teams, producing material used in products brought to market. He's received numerous awards for his work in publishing, gaming, and marketing. He has worked as an illustrator, potter, photographer, graphic designer, 3D modeler, and animator, art director, and creative director. He is dedicated to mentoring young artists and growing the creative community. And yet, John finds time to enjoy motorcycling and blacksmithing. Aren't those two polar opposites? John was honored in 2010 as Chelsea Award for Best Art Director. I can imagine why. And more recently, his participation was requested in the jury for the upcoming Spectrum 19 art selection process. We have a little update on that one. So with no further ado, is that you, John?
This is John.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Patty. How are you today?
I'm doing better.
Better is good.
Yeah, gotten that nasty stuff last week, and we've just been trying to get it out of our systems. As you would think that here we are in Arizona, we never get sick here in a warm. Yeah, so that's just somehow.
I think germs live everywhere.
Yeah, and viruses spread faster than anything in the heat.
Yeah.
So I hopefully you heard a little bit of intro.
I did. Wow, I impressed myself there for a little while.
So, I mean, I did tell people, you know, kind of who you work for. So would you mind explaining a little more about Wizards of the Coast Hasbro and how that, you know, what products they work on and how that works into what you do?
Sure, I'll be happy to. So I'm the Senior Creative Director at Wizards of the Coast, which is a subsidiary of Hasbro. And so we're primarily known for, we have three key brands here at Wizards of the Coast. We do Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, and Duel Masters / Kaijudo, which is one of our younger brands. And so I'm the creative director on Dungeons & Dragons. And so essentially what my job is anything that any place there's a visual component, whether it's on our tabletop RPG stuff, or our comic books, or our video games, any place we have visuals, ultimately the finger comes down to me of making sure that it ties in with the world and fulfills on the brand promise of what we're supposed to be doing with our visuals.
Well, you have visual on everything.
Yes, we do. So it's pretty broad. I mean, so in the course of a day, I'll do everything from work on our RPGs to doing a novel cover, or working with the comic folks doing comics, or working on, you know, world building with the video games. So it's a really varied, rich job. So it's a lot of fun.
Now, I would think that you would have multiple art directors there to handle certain things. Is that the case there?
That is the case. I have three other art directors. Daniel Jellin, who handles all my games. Kate My brain just died. I hate when it happens.
I hate it when they happen too.
But yeah, Kate and Mary are also, they're two of my art directors on the print side, so they do a lot of the tabletop RPGs and tabletop gaming stuff.
Awesome. And so, you know, you're Hasbro has got their fingers in almost everything, I would think, then. I can't think of anything they don't have their fingers on.
Well, there's a few things they don't, but the Hasbro is pretty big, and they've got a lot of good IPs underneath their belt. So we're in good company. We're playing in the realms of, you know, Monopoly and Transformers and My Little Pony and all that fun stuff. But our brands are decidedly much more mature. They're much more adult themed and oriented. So you won't see too many of the same venues as you would, you know, My Little Pony. So.
Well, you know, I learned from experience about a year ago that My Little Pony, for some people, is not My Little Pony I grew up with. So.
No, it's not. It's not. Especially when you start talking about the bronies, which is, you know, the boy side of the whole brand.
Yeah. It just was a little shocking to me. It was like, what?
Yep.
But, that's to each his own, I always say.
Yep.
And I would say that, you know, I grew up with friends who loved, you know, D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get into it too much myself, as I was more an active person. I you know, was in the clubs and dancing and you know, was a majorette, that kind of thing. So I didn't get into, you know, the gaming aspect, but I had a lot of geek friends. So...
Mm-hmm.
So they all liked the D&D and world building. And it wasn't until started really writing that I realized that world building was important, especially with the aspect of science fiction.
Right.
Fantasy. And so that's what you guys do. You world build.
I do. Yeah, that's actually a significant portion of my job is doing that world building. So, you know, I work with... a number of writers and folks, and we spend a lot of our time dreaming up creatures and monsters and trying to figure out and flesh out the world to sit here and understand what the cultures are like, all the characters who are within those realms. And so it's a lot of fun, especially when you're dealing with Dungeons & Dragons, which has it has a number of different worlds that you work within. Our main one is Forgotten Realms. And that in itself is just, I mean, it's a Earth-sized world, and there's a lot of space and a lot of places to have stories happening in that world.
So you need to know the backstory. And so what you do, build a backstory first, and then you know, whatever the story is that's going on before you, right?
Right. So the great thing about Dungeons & Dragons is it's been around for almost 40 years. So we've got 40 years worth of story just lying there, and we just... We're constantly going over and pulling tidbits out of that and then trying to take the story forward through the years, too. So we've got some great writers that do a lot of our novels. We've got R.A. Salvatore and Ed Greenwood and a number of these guys who are just doing fantastic novels that sit here and carry the storyline forward every year. And so we're constantly continuing that world and continuing building the events that happen within the world.
Wow. Is there anything that's coming up that you can actually tell us about?
Well, we've a couple of big things that have been happening. We've got we just launched a new comic line that started this month with R.A. Salvatore and Gino Salvatore as the writers, and the great, some really super great art. It's called the Cutter series, and it's a drow inspired storyline. We've got the D&D Neverwinter action MMO, which is going to be going open beta at the end of the month and then going truly open probably sometime next month, probably. And, and other than that, we've got all kinds of fun stuff that we'll be announcing when we hit Gen Con, which is in August. And there's things going on every day. The best place to try and keep up is on our website, which is at wizards.com/D&D. And there's all kinds of fun stuff you can find out because we've got articles going up every day and all kinds of interesting things going on every day. So the other big thing we're doing is we're in the middle of our playtest for our new edition of D&D, and that's been going on for almost a year now, and that's been going really well, and we're testing that whole that new rule system with the public, you know, that allowing them to get in and express their opinions on and help guide the growth of the D&D as it moves forward in the future on the tabletop RPG.
And when you say D&D, you spell that out, or do you do D and?
For the website, yeah, it's just D&D.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to give everybody on the line here. Let them know.
Oh, okay.
Part of what I do. So, everybody, just so that way you know, you can call in. Like, I don't have to have John by myself here. you know, I see you guys sit there listening in the dark there. You guys can actually come up and actually say something. So, see you in chat. You can come up, come forward and ask questions if you don't want to call. It's obviously in chat. It's right below the information about the this particular episode. And I will, if you have a question or comment, I will definitely forward it. If you want to call in, it's 714-242-5145. So, on any given day, you touch on a lot of different projects. How do you keep up with that?
Wow, that's a great question. I have lots of sticky notes all over my cube. and then I have we have numbers of different project managers that help me keep things in line. We got a software. I mean, there's just lots of little stuff going on. But, yeah, sticky notes are probably – I would die without sticky notes.
So you deal with the authors themselves, you know, people who actually create – help you create the world, and then – you also deal with the artists.
Yes.
Now, how does that work with you? I mean, you. How do you find your artists?
Oh, that's a big question. I do a lot of stuff. So, we have online submission where people can just send samples of their art or a URL to their online portfolio. They could just send that to. Our email, which is at artdrop@wizards.com. I also go to lots of conventions, schools, lots of different events where I just meet with artists. I also write a blog called theartorder.com, which is a blog that I write about the business side of illustration, and we do challenges about once every month or so, and people can enter that in and sit here and get seen by other art directors and other artists in the industry and get judged by that. And so through all those different avenues, I meet artists, and then also through referrals, I meet artists as well. And so on average, I'll work with anywhere between 100 and 200 artists in a year.
Wow.
Sometimes more, sometimes less. Just depends on what projects we've got going on. You know, and it's everything from concept art to full-on illustration to character design, some 3D. We do some 3D work every now and then, animation. I've done a number of animations, you know, and so it's really varied, again, about all the different types of artists that I'll work with. And so I'm always looking for new folks, you know, whether they're cartographers or environmental artists or fashion designers. I mean, right now I've been talking to lots of fashion designers to sit here and bring in that expertise and that specialization into some of the work that I'm doing in my world building. So it's really varied of all the type of people I'm looking for.
Wow. So are you trying to build some cosplay going on?
Not necessarily cosplay, but one of the big things I like to do is in my development is really to dig into cultures. And so when I'm talking about a region within a world, I really like to sit here and say, what makes this region different from every other region? And so I really like to start talking about, you know, the costume and the textiles that they use and the color palettes and the different materials. And so it's really great to bring somebody who has fashion experience to sit here and really have those conversations, because they can really nail down the differences between different regions and build a really nice palette for us to move forward in our world building, so that as I'm talking with illustrators and who are going to go on and illustrate these, I can start showing them actual fabric swatches and colors, and so they really get a sense of, oh, this is what goes on here, so that when we do illustrations of people in town. I can look at the people in town. It's not it's just not this generic Ren Faire, you know, motley crew running around. I can actually look at it and say, oh, there's somebody from this region, there's somebody from that region. And so that's one of the big things that we're shooting to do nowadays.
Well, you know, you have to go to that detail for world building. That's great.
Yeah.
So if, let's say you were an artist and you wanted to impress you, what kind of person would you be looking for? What is it that sets one artist apart?
Oh, wow, that's a great question, too. You know, obviously, their body of work is the first place they get my attention, you know. So when I see a portfolio or I see samples of somebody's work, the level of quality and the thoughtfulness of their work is what really catches my eye. And so, and I look for different things, you know. It's like when I'm looking for an illustrator, I'm looking for a really lovely painterly look. I'm looking for folks who have great storytelling in their illustrations, who have great hand skills. For concept art, I'm looking for people who really think outside the box, who are always coming up with, you know, they don't look at the same thing and say, this creature is the same creature as the same creature. They always come up with something fresh and new, and they have a different take on things. You know, for animators, I'm looking for folks who really understand motion and attitude and movement in the body. So there's lots of different things, you know. And then beyond that, then what I'm really looking for is I'm looking for folks who are uber professional. They're just, you know, they're on the top of their game. They communicate well. They make sure that every email comes to me has contact information in it so that I can say, okay, I know how to call them or contact them if I need to, you know. And so that's the type of stuff I really look for when I'm looking for an artist.
Yeah, there's so many artists with different, so different styles. Is there anything that in the styles that sets them apart that you're looking for your specific projects?
That's a great question. And the fun thing about that is because of all the fun different venues I have that I get to work in, I get the opportunity to work in lots of different styles. So obviously when I'm working in comic books, they have their own look. And so when I'm looking for styles, I start looking at an artist from the idea of where do I think they can fit in into the ecology of our brand. So I'm talking to some people, I'll say, okay, this would be a great fit for comic books, or this would be a great fit for our TRPG, or this might be a great fit for our novels. And so there's lots of different styles. I work within probably about 8 or 10 different styles, depending on where the sales market, or what market and what demographic we're trying to hit. And so I'm always kind of looking at those things. And, I mean, even every now and then I'll get a really wacky project where we're working with something where I get to use something really crazy, like, you know, an anime style or whatnot, but that's not too often. But for the most part, you know, there's a lot of room and wiggle room in that genre of just fantasy where I get to use a lot of different styles.
Yeah, that does come in handy to have that many, you know, different projects going on that you can fit somebody. So, you know, when I tell people who have these questions about, well, what kind of book are you looking for your publishing company, I say, well, you know, you need to, you know, if you're going to go look for a publisher, you need to do your homework. And I think the same thing here, where if you want to be an artist for a certain aspect of Wizards of the Coast, you need to study it. Yeah,
that's
try
very
to
true. Yeah.
Emulate that, you know, particular style, and then try to impress you.
No, that is actually one of the biggest things I often talk to folks about is they'll come up to me and they'll show me samples and I'll go, great, it's wonderful, but you really don't understand my brand because they're showing me, you know, pretty ponies and pretty, you know, flowers and puppy dogs and stuff. And this, you know, they may have the most amazing skills in the world, but if they don't understand my brand, it's not really going to work for me because I have no understanding of how they can translate from their, you know, their ponies and their flowers over to hardcore illustrations with, you know, fighting warriors and wizards and dragons and all that kind of stuff. And so doing the research to really understand what the genre is, what the characters are, what the ethos is, what the emotional resonance is, really makes a difference when you're trying to talk to an art director and try and pitch them on the idea that you really should be working with them.
Exactly. And that's why I say, you know, do your homework. to get to know their brand, you know, get to find out what their styles are, and then, you know, shoot for them if that's what you want to do. Right. Otherwise, go work for somebody who you know, emulates your style, or stay, you know, stay where you are.
Exactly. Yeah, that's we have that conversation quite a bit as well too. And, you know, people start, they'll say, you know, what should I do? And first thing I'll often tell them is, you should look at your own style and understand what you're trying to do, and then just go walk through the bookstores and say what publishers are working in that same style, and just pick up the book, flip it over, find out who the publisher is, and then figure out how to contact them. Because that's, you know, sometimes you don't try and force fit your style into a publisher. You find publishers that already work with a style similar to yours and tie into them. You know, that just makes sense, and that's an easy way to get to do work with somebody, is to sit here and just show, hey, I already work with you, I understand how this works.
Exactly. Why make your job harder?
So right.
You should be trying to, go into that. Unless, of course, your stuff is close enough to that style that it doesn't take too much to tweak it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some artists who like to have multiple styles, and so they like to stretch and say, oh, it's, you know, so and so, John Schneider's looking for artists in this style, and I really want to work with John, and here I'm going to do a few pieces to show him I can work, you know, I can do this stuff with you. And so that's always a viable option, but you really have to do the research, kind of going back to what you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. Now, you go into schools, and I know that you really like to, to touch base with kids. Tell us about your projects there.
Oh, well, one of my biggest pastimes is mentoring aspiring artists and students. I loved mentoring. I've probably got about 6 or 7 mentors programs going on at any one time. I like to go into schools quite a bit. Just in this month, I've done 4. Yeah, I think 4 visits to art schools and colleges in the area. Meeting with students, doing talks on portfolio reviews, or doing portfolio reviews, and then also going to career fairs and just chatting with the staff and kind of getting to know how I can help out with the staff, whether it's coming in as a guest lecturer or whatnot. And that's just one of the things I really love. I had a mentor when I was growing up in the industry, mm-hmm. and he taught me everything that ultimately led to me, developing a career in the creative industry. And the big thing he always told me was just, you don't need to do anything except pay it forward. And so that's what I've always tried to do is all these years, is I've just tried to take what he taught me and then pass it on to other folks, and then take the rest of the stuff that was taught to me by other people and pass it on. And so it's a really big thing for me. I spend a lot of time doing it, and it's just a huge passion.
Yeah, obviously you like it, so that's what makes it nice, is getting out and actually helping kids when they're young. I think they're a lot more excited about life, because they haven't, they haven't had any real major disappointments yet, and they're excited to do things. Or eager.
Well, there's a lot of eagerness. I had the joy of just letting 2 sophomores in college, got to let them know this week that they were going to come and work, do an intern job with me over the summer, and that they're just like, they're giddy, about the idea of being able to come and do that. And I'm pretty giddy about it, to be honest, as well, too, because that the energy they bring in to the group is just amazing, because they often bring a lot of a new life in to the group, and they kind of affect the rest of the creative team as well, so we get to have a lot of fun, as well as they get to learn a lot of stuff.
Wow. Well, I know we've got a lot of people coming in the chat. Welcome, everyone. We're talking to John from Wizards of the Coast. I'm sure you probably know that by now, but I just want to make sure you're in the right episode. I am dropping in some different links from John's website, for where he works, on opportunities, working with Wizards of the Coast, and some press information. You've got something going on. Apparently, the other day, you guys, Netflix and Hasbro announced expanded multi-year kids programming agreement.
Well, there you go. That's even news to me. How about that?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's like, well, gee, I wish I'd ask them no, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's such a big company, such a big brand. There's so much stuff that goes on all the time. It's almost impossible to keep track of it all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine so. And you guys' website is really, it's just really kicking. She's just on the press page, you got this werewolf that just totally like comes out of the screen. Yeah, nice job. Nice job. So,
thanks.
A little bit of places that you've been to recently. I know that you've been getting around, going to other conventions around the country.
Yes, not too many yet this year. I'm getting ready to go to the Spectrum Live down to Kansas City next month. I'll also be coming down to Arizona to see you at Elevacon.
Yeah.
It's going to be a busy May. And then I do Gen Con. A couple of the art directors on my staff will also be doing Comic-Con down in San Diego. I do LuxCon over in Allentown in September, you know, so, and then there's a couple of other ones in there. We got PAX East, PAX Prime. We just finished PAX East, but we got PAX Prime coming up in August. So it's lots of venues going on.
Now, Wizards of the Coast doesn't do their own convention, do they?
We do not. Gen Con used to be run by Wizards of the Coast, but it's run into privately now. But that's kind of, I mean, for Dungeons and Dragons, that really is kind of our big premier convention that we go to.
Okay, because I thought I knew something about that before. That's why I was asking.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to be with us in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it, too.
So I'm sure the weather's been, I wonder if the weather's been weird up in Seattle.
Well, it's been normal Seattle weather. It's been cool and rainy.
Wow. It'd be kind of nice. I just keep going up and down. It's very odd. It's been very strange this year.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's led to a lot of people, you know, getting sick because we're used to pretty steady weather. So this, you know, suddenly gets really cold and rainy, and it's hailing, and then, you know, 2 days later it's sun shining and it's almost 110. So it's weird, very strange.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't hit the hundreds yet, but almost.
Sounds like my days in Texas.
Yeah, Texas is more like that.
Yeah.
Very odd weather. So of course I've been here for a long time, so I'm used to this kind of mild weather. So you're going to be with us, and I know you're waiting for this because I'm obviously going to talk a little bit about Raymond.
Oh, yes.
When, just so everyone knows the whole story here, and actually I'll be writing about this, and I'm writing something about you and about the question and answer that we have here today will be in the program book. And I first found you because I was thinking of Wizards of the Coast and found your information and contacted you to be our artist guest of honor. And you nicely told me that you were you were happy to accept that you were really art director. And whether or not I really wanted you, well, I still wanted you because you know, you have your finger on the pulse of the art industry, especially in your neck of the woods. And so we made up a new title for you. So I said, well, that's what being a chair is all about. I can make up titles. So so I said, and then I said, okay, now we need to find an artist that is solely artist. And looking through some, you know, some things that your company has done, and Raymond just popped out. His stuff is so multidimensional.
Yes,
is the first word that comes to my mind.
He does just does gorgeous stuff. I mean, I love the motion. I love the palettes. I love the activity and the emotional resonance he pulls. Raymond just does amazing stuff. It's great.
I can imagine his background, as anybody needs to know. Raymond Swanland's going to be our artist guest of honor at Leprechaun this year. And something that, you know, is new to us, and I don't think he's really done too many conventions yet. So you guys are really going to, you're going to say, where has this guy been? And his backgrounds are so, again, they capture so many different colors.
Yeah, it does.
And his monsters. You know, that's obviously what interested you.
Well, it's his monsters too, but it's also his characters. He just does amazing characters. And the thing I've loved about Raymond all these years is the fact that as artists, we're always dealing with how do we bring something more to an image than, because it's too, you know, it's just a flat 2D split second moment in time. How do we give it life beyond that initial glimpse? And that's one of the things that Raymond really does well, is he puts enough detail in it that it really draws you into the image, he brings you around in it, really gets you entranced with what's going on with it. The characters are lively, they've got lots of motion and lots of feeling to them. And he often works with a rather limited palette, but he just brings so much life to the images. It's just amazing. You know, and that's why it was no big surprise to see that one of the covers that he just recently did for me made it into Spectrum 20, because that his just work is just outstanding.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up, that, you know, you guys just found out about that, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we can, you know, definitely let everybody know. We're bringing that information out for the Leprechaun, of course. Now, he does the trading card game. I know he does some of the characters on your card. So does he also work on the D&D side?
He does novel covers for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know he does not. I know he's done a couple novel covers for Tor as well.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah.
All the smart people use him.
All the ones who... Now, is it that you give him very little information and he's able to capture the idea and flavor of what you're looking for?
Well, it so much depends on each of the novels that we do. Sometimes I have a significant amount of information because I have, you know, really known characters or a really known location, and so I can give him more rich details. Sometimes it's really minimalistic, so... what he has really good at doing is taking what little detail I do have and just making it so much bigger and richer. And so, like the cover that made it in Spectrum 20, I gave him lots of information about the characters with a very small amount of information about the environment. And he took that little bit of information about the environment and made it super dynamic and super awesome. And just, you know, it just played in so well with the whole story. And so, that really just took everything to the next level. It wasn't just about two characters, and then it was about this whole event that was going on.
Wow. Yeah, and that would make it, you know, definitely interesting. I'd like to see that sometime. He did the cover for the program book.
Oh, excellent.
And I said, well, it's not really what I had in mind for rainbows, but... but he had created a whole world, really. I see what you're saying. It wasn't just a character. He had a Rhino King.
Yeah.
And he created this whole world right there in front of me. And I, as an author, fiction author, I just looking at it, I already came up with a whole idea of backstory with this particular piece. And thought about, I mean, the whole story started playing out in my head.
when they're good, that's what they can do.
Yeah, exactly. It's what pulls that piece off the shelf and makes you want to buy it. It's when it's that dimensional. And again, that's the first thing I thought of is, wow, he's got so many layers on here. And there's so many different things going on in that piece.
Right.
Any piece that he does, particularly, he's got so many things going on. The action, I mean, is not a character who's sitting there looking at you. It's a character who is actually doing something. It's action-oriented most of the time.
Yep.
And the world around it is also, being built right there in front of you. So that's what I liked about him. I thought that this is somebody, when I was looking for an art guest of honor, I'm looking for somebody who is multidimensional, who can do book covers, who can do different art forms, but is just very rich in his capturing of the essence of art. And I think that I was very happy that he said yes. So we'll be having an interview with him before May 9th as well. And he's also staying behind in Arizona for a few extra days. So just more him and see, find out more about him. So I'm sure he's as multidimensional as his things that he creates.
I would assume. We haven't met in person, so I'm actually looking forward to getting a chance to meet in person.
Yeah, you tell me that. I thought that was just so awesome.
Yeah.
As everybody is coming in on Thursday night. So you guys will all be there for the film festival on Thursday night. And you guys will be able to meet and talk and relax and have some fun and not be, forced to do anything. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, better enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. Because I'm quite sure that there's going to be some other excited. I know there's a few artists who are very excited just to meet with you.
Yeah.
They'll be able to show you their stuff. And this is one reason why I say, you know what, we need to have an interview with you. And you guys need to listen, because that way you can find out more about what John's looking for. So tell us about, you're an interesting character yourself.
I get told that often.
I got your picture of you and your motorcycle, and I had it on a poster along with other aspects of your work down at Tucson Festival of Books.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of old guys come up and they're talking to me, and they look at the, they said, is he on a motorcycle? I said, yeah. Oh, okay. He just thought that was so weird.
Yeah.
I don't think it's weird. I think it's interesting. And when I found out that you were a blacksmither, that you like blacksmith, that's awkward. That's weird.
No. I mean, what better to sit here and be into if you're into the fantasy genres, somebody who can do blacksmithing, make your own sword, make your own armor, all that fun stuff. But, I have a really eclectic taste in a lot of different things. I like to adventure and try lots of different experiences. So, I was taking a class in metal sculpture and got introduced to blacksmithing and started doing blacksmithing. And I've been riding motorcycles since I was 16 years old. And, I just have lots of different interests. I mean, here I'll throw another one at you. I also like the square dance. So me and my whole family, go square dancing a couple of times a week. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny, but that's an Eastern thing. Usually the square dancing, and actually Northern, because up north is the square dancing. They brought the square dancing down to Arizona. That's what those who live in the north. We definitely wasn't born here.
It's
fun. You like to be multi. You like a lot of different things, and I do.
A lot of people tell me that I'm really hard to pigeonhole because I like so many different aspects of life. My thing is I just like to go out and try all kinds of fun stuff. And if it excites me, I keep doing it. If it doesn't excite me, then I'll move on to something else. But I'm a little bit of a dilettante.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, why not enjoy, try different things? How are you going to know what you like and what you don't like?
That's it. Well, and to be honest, my world of creativity is much the same way. I got started in the industry as a photographer, doing fashion and food photography, and then started doing graphic design and did illustration and pottery and sculpture, and you know, and I just kind of bounced through lots of stuff, did 3D animation. And the great thing about it is when I got to the position I'm in now, having an understanding and an appreciation and working knowledge in all those different specializations within the creative world allows me to, in my position, be able to talk to, you know, everything from a 3D modeler all the way to an animator to a comic guy to, you know, and so all those different things helped feed to who I am now. And so when I'm talking to kids, I often tell them that, you know, just don't feel like you've got to take one thing and stick with that for the rest of your life. You know, that's, you get to explore, play, and have adventure throughout your life, and it's going to all do nothing but feed who the person you're going to be later on in life.
Exactly. I said, you know, it's not any kind of world if I'm only stuck with doing one thing in my life. That's not really what it's all about. You're meant to, you know, love multiple people. You're meant to love multiple things and try as many things as possible. So that way you learn more about yourself.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's my philosophy as well. So that's really cool. I got a lot of people on since they're listening to you, but you know, it's like, come on, people, come up with some questions. Just you got like, you know, 15 people sitting here. Come on.
Well, they can ask anything. I'll even answer the awkward ones sometimes.
So, so tell us about your family. Your close family.
Oh, my family. I have my wife Lisa, who will actually be joining me down in Arizona. She's looking forward to it. And then we have 5 kids. Most of them, they range from 27 down to almost 16. And one son is down in Texas, and he and his wife live down in the Fort Worth area. And he's also a big D&D fan and comic fan and loves the genre. My other son's in theater and is actually at the moment is touring the country with a band, doing all their lighting and having a great time there. And then I have my 2 daughters. One just graduated from college, and the other one works in the social ad agency style. I don't even know what their actual title is, but you know, she works in the social realm, working with advertising and ad placement, stuff like that. And then my youngest is in high school.
Wow.
And they're just as eclectic as I am.
That works out well. And the reason I ask, you know, says for people who are dropping out, the reason I ask you these questions is because it makes you a real person.
Oh, okay.
That way, you know, people who want to come up to you and talk to you, it's like, got to remember that he's a real person. And that you should treat him accordingly.
Yes, and I'm also the real person who loves to talk, so they can always feel free to come over and chat. And I love to answer questions and talk about stuff. And if you get me talking about art, I'll talk for days and days and days. So I'm not a shy flower.
So when you're here in town, hopefully you guys will be able to get out and do a couple things while you're here.
That'd be cool. I've only been to Arizona a couple of times, so.
So what have you seen when you've been here before?
Phoenix is about the only place we were at, and we didn't even get to see a lot there. It was just kind of a cruising through town. We were just on our way, cruising from Texas on over to California, so it was kind of just a whirlwind tour through Arizona.
Well, you know, this is a good time of year. It's pretty mild. And it's nice and breezy, so it's definitely outdoor weather. Yes, you should be going outside and doing things. A lot of things are in bloom. So in fact, I'm going to I think it's Sunday night to the botanical gardens, which is really, really, everything's in full bloom right now. I'll let you guys know, and so that way you guys can get out. Definitely should get out on Friday, you know, before everything starts. You can get out and do something, and that'd be good for you guys.
Excellent. We'll do that.
Definitely make some suggestions. I'm sure that my friends will make some suggestions for you on Thursday night.
So tell me about the art show.
the art show. Art show. Well, let's see. We are taking up 3 ballrooms this year for the art show.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And this will be the first year. Actually, we have some an autistic group called Seeds for Autism, and they have some people who are putting up works as well this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. These are usually kids who are just out of high school, but they're trying to find their way in the world. And this helps them to be able to find, you know, to work in the community outside of their, you know, usual community that they're used to. Trying to get them out and comfortable in the world. So that's what we said. Yes, we definitely want to get these kids in, you know, involved with putting their stuff up for sale. So this will be the first time they've ever done this. So we're real excited to have them on board.
That's so a great opportunity. Yeah,
yeah, that's, and that really is what should be all about. I mean, it's Leprechaun is foremost an artist. As such, it's, we, you know, obviously still genre related, but and we do have obviously our author, guests of honor, and things like that. But we mm-hmm. we mostly have art, which is why I said, you know, we should have not only an art guest of honor, but our industry guest of honor, which is the first time that's, I think they've ever done that. You know, because after all, that's what Leprechaun's about, is mostly artistic. And the other, there's another convention in town that's mostly literature. And so, you know, they got their, it's the same genre. We all work together and pretty much do the same things, but we're mostly art related. So our show is real important to us because, again, that the showcases local talent as well as outside of our area talent. So anybody can send their stuff to us. And so for those who want to know, hey, maybe I should send some things. Yes, we're still accepting some stuff. We've got probably about more than 3/4 of our panels already sold, and quite a few of the tables. As we have like tables for sculpture, jewelry work. So, you know, we think a lot of things are artistic. So we've got a lot of tables for that, individual pieces, you know, some, if you're selling prints, you can also have a basket there with your prints and be able to sell them there as well. So we're an all-around type of art show.
Lots of great opportunities for artists then.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Great.
I think the more variety, the better. Because as I have often said, for the last couple of years I've been managing editor for a newspaper, it's speculative fiction in nature. Speculative is very broad. It's like,
yeah.
You
yeah.
you're eclectic. You love a lot of different things.
Well, and I love going to the art shows at the events, because it's another great venue for me to try and find new artists and see what people are doing and what's going on out there.
That's great, because I'm working on schedule, and Friday night after the Meet the Pros, you will be able to have a chance to walk through the art show with the other artists. Anybody
Excellent.
Wants to go with you to talk about the different pieces in the show, and give, you know, if they happen to be with you, give them some direction on what their style is and all that. So
yeah.
It's definitely you and Raymond will be, and Jeff Perryman will be able to share in that. So that should be awesome.
Sounds like great fun.
And on Sunday, I have you, so that way you have an hour, I think an hour and a half to actually talk to anybody who has their, I went blank. I did what you did earlier. All their show, you know, everything that they have, their body of works. You'd be
right.
Able to.
Right, portfolios, yeah.
Yeah, and be able to take a look at it and advise them in any direction. So I know a few local artists who are definitely looking forward to talking to you. So
yeah, I've had a couple of them contact me saying they're looking forward to getting together.
Ah, see? That's definitely entrepreneurial of them.
There you go.
And I said, you know, you're open to do that kind of thing. You're definitely an open guy and be able to talk to people. And I think they'll feel really, they should benefit from that. So anything else you want to talk to me about? I'm starting to run out. People aren't giving me anything. All the good juicy stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
And people, come on, I'm running out of questions. I want to say some things for when he's here. So I'm hoping that you guys would ask me something.
Yeah. One of the big questions I get all the time is, do I have a preference for digital or for traditional? And so that's always one of those fun questions, especially when you're talking with artists. And I'm one of the rare birds out there who says that basically for me, digital is just another tool, just like your pencils or your paints or your whatever. I mean, digital is just another tool. And for me, understanding the use of your tools is more important than what tools you actually use. One of the stories I like to tell is I love traditional paintings just because I love the smell of them. I love the look of them, the feel of them. But even in that, I used to have an artist that I worked with for many years who did a lot of knife work in his paintings. And he got, over the years, he kept getting more and more stylistic with his knife work to the point where his knife work became more of the emphasis than the rest of the image. And when we hit that point, I had to stop working with him simply from the fact that, you know, when his tool became so overbearing that it dominated what the image was and the image no longer had a voice outside of it, just mark making, it became a problem. And that's often what when I talk to students about whether they're doing traditional or digital, that's what I try and talk to them about, is the fact that it's just another tool. And it's when your tool gets in the way of the voice of the image is that it's a problem, not whether you're using a traditional or a digital. You know, so folks who sit here and use heavy reliance on just stock blurs and starbursts and all that kind of stuff to sit here and create their imagery, that's when you tend to have problems with whether it's digital or traditional. You know, and it's not even about the fact that it's digital, it's the fact that you're using a device to sit here and create a visual mark that takes all the life out of it. And so I'll often say, you know, amazingly, people have been able to paint blurs for millions of years, well, maybe not millions of years, but thousands of years, without ever having a blur tool. So instead of using a blur tool to create a blur, paint a blur. And so when artists start doing that, then the tool becomes less important, and the visual and then the vision of the voice of the image actually gets to come out. So that's usually my stand on digital versus traditional.
Wow, that's a great analogy there. Do you think that the digital sometimes the colors are a little more vibrant because of the fact that they are digital?
Well, that really depends. I mean, because when you're talking about on screen, obviously on screen has a greater gamut than print materials do. We're using four color press where you're having to deal with a CMYK build. You know, so your greens and your blues are never quite as vivid as they would be in print. But at the same point, if you've got, if you've got a super great printer and you're using a lot of the high-end printing methods where you're getting beyond just the straight CMYK, you can start to pick up some of those colors as well, too.
Very good point.
Yeah, that really just kind of depends on what you're trying to do and what the final end item is, because I've had pieces of art that just look stellar when I get them in and I look at them and I go, that's great, but now when I throw a CMYK four-color process gamut on top of it, everything goes bland and all the color drops out of it.
Yeah.
And so it's not, even though the original image was beautiful, we really have to, when we're doing our painting and our illustration, we really have to do it from the standpoint of thinking about what the end product's going to be. So it doesn't do me any good to sit here and paint with Day-Glo greens and yellows and reds if I know that I'm going to be working on a four-color printer that's not going to be able to reproduce them.
Yeah. I get that question a lot because of the fact that, you know, whether or not you print on a real press or whether you print on digital.
Yeah.
And, you know, toners and digital printers are, a little more vibrant. But again, it does depend on who is you're using and what your resolution is, and so many different aspects. You know, I said, you know, that's a hard question to answer because of the fact that you don't know unless you know exactly what you're working on, and then how did that artist create it?
Right. Yeah, that's another tough thing. I mean, I get it all the time, especially when we're starting to talk about digital art. It gets really frustrating sometimes because I'll have an artist, they'll send me their art, and we'll get it printed, and they'll say, oh, my goodness, John, what the heck did you do my art? It looks terrible. And I'm like, well, it matches exactly what I got on my screen, you know, and so I'm not sure why it is. Well, their screen is calibrated differently than my screen, and so when they were printing it up, they saw it looking different, and so that's often... You know, the thing we also have to be aware of is that digital is only as good as the other person's monitor or the other person's material.
Yes.
So it may look awesome on yours, but if your monitor isn't calibrated correctly to a standard, you know, industry standard, and they're looking on a PC versus you looking on a Mac, versus, you know, all kinds of wonky things. So.
Yeah, because they, you know, I remind them, says, yes, well, you created a CMYK, but this is an RGB monitor that you're looking at.
Yeah.
It's two different medias.
Yep.
So as, you know, most people don't, you know, don't understand that because they don't live in that world. I've had 22 years of graphic design experience. I know that it does matter which calibration you have, and does matter what it is that you're creating it. I have people who send me things that are layered so much, and they don't get rid of the layers.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it becomes mud when they print it. And it's like, oh my gosh, what did you do? Like you said. And I said, well, you had all these other layers. What do you expect me to do? Fix it for you?
Sometimes that happens. So.
Yeah, you want me to fix it. I asked you want me to fix it. You say no, leave it as is. That means that you crunched all the layers. There's nothing I can do with it. I can't fix it because you already put all the layers on top of each other, and there's no way to separate them.
Yeah.
So you've got all those different colors competing on one thing, and I've seen some works that are, you know, a good... I mean, the ink just completely raises on the page because how many different layers they had.
Yeah, you got to watch out for your ink densities, yep.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I'm now teaching other people. Ink density is really what can kill your vibrancy of your work. So, you know, don't give me a bunch of different layers because that's going to ruin it. Now, if you wanted to send it to me with different layers because you know I can pull out those layers and use it, then just tell me that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
I did have Francesco last year who did that. He gave me an art piece because I wanted banners for artwork on the program book. So I said, go ahead and keep it in the same file, and I'll just pull out the different layers. And so that was easy enough to do. You only had to send me one piece. So the trick that you can do, as long as you've got a better bandwidth, so that way you can download that huge file.
Yeah.
And somebody on the other end who can go ahead and pull it out and have no problem with it. So. Yeah, working with artists are interesting and it's sometimes really, really awesome, and sometimes it's a little hard. So have you ever dealt with someone who's you know, you don't have to say who it is, but just wouldn't listen to you?
Well, I think every art director has those horror stories where you have artists or designers that you're working with that are unwilling or unable to take direction. I mean, because there's a reason our titles say art direction is because that's part of our job is to sit here and make sure that things are fitting within certain parameters of a brand. So, you know, I've had artists where I'll ask them for, I need a picture of some elves in it, and they'll sit here and give me these elves that they're elves, but they're not my D&D elves. And so we'll go back and forth about that, and, you know, and they may not be able to may be unwilling to make those changes, and then we'll often have to go into kill fees and stuff like that. But, you know, and that's a horrible thing. I hate when we have a relationship like that that falls apart for a couple of reasons. One, you know, they're talented illustrators. I like to work with them, you know. But at the same point, if we can't work together, then it's always a team event. And so if we can't work together, it's just not going to fly. But then also on the other side, so many folks forget the fact that our industry, you know, despite as big as the industry is, it's really small in a lot of regards. You know, there's a small handful of art directors, and many of us know each other in the industry, and we chat and converse all the time. And so when you do something that impacts on your relationship with an art director in the industry, chances are the other art directors hear about it and understand what's going on, and then they sit here and get very gun shy about working with you as well too, because they're afraid the same thing might happen to them.
Oh yeah,
that's a really important thing to remember when we're working with folks, is that our relationship directly affects what our reputation is going to be, and that reputation spreads like wildfire, whether it be good or bad, really quick, really fast.
Yeah, it really does raise bells. Got people that if you start complaining to, like, I get this a lot, right? Somebody's complaining about their previous printer, and they're, you know, it's here to talking to me. I'm sitting here. I'm at a print shop, and says, so you're complaining about the other printer. What is that? And bad mouthing the printer. And oh yeah, you had another problem with another printer in town, and so that makes two printers that you are not happy with in town. And I'm going, why would I want to work with you?
Yeah.
Because more than likely, I'm going to do something that you're not going to like too.
It could be that, yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes it's not the business that you're working with. Sometimes you're just not working within the parameters that you should work and not listen to people who want to know. That's how you've got to work, and that's why it's really important for art directors and designers, and that listen to the printers.
Yeah, there's that too.
They're a wealth of information, and if you really listen to them, your stuff is going to look a lot better coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's any time you're working with an expert, you should always sit here and help and use the expertise that they're offering to you.
Sure. I'll sit there and I'll listen and I'll take it. And that's one reason why I don't have any problem with working with printers, because I actually listen to them. I say, how can I make this work with you? And they'll tell me. And I say, okay, see, now I didn't waste my time. And I got a beautiful piece.
Yeah.
So that's really the key, is sometimes things happen. But if you listen, if you go walk in the door to begin with and say, hey, I'm looking to do this, how can I make this work on your press, and listen to them, you usually bypass a lot of problems.
That is true.
So what other, take advantage of the, you know, experts in the industry, because that's just one reason why they've had years and years of experience, and they know their equipment better than anybody else.
Yeah.
So who else do you work with other than artists? And here's a question I have. Do you deal with the authors themselves when it comes to story writing?
In a limited degree. So we'll have I will work with them. Some point, usually, let me step back for a second and say this again. I work with them in the fact of often when we're doing, we'll have like a couple of artist summit during the year where we'll bring all the authors out and we meet with, and the story guys sit down and talk about story, and the editors get in there and they sit here and plot out what they're going to be doing over the next, you know, year or 2 years and whatnot. And then part of what I do at that point is I will work with them to try and glean information from them about the characters, about the settings, about what's going on in the world, so that when we get ready to do their covers or any world building that we're doing around that, that I get as much information as I can. We'll bounce emails back and forth every now and then. And then we always share, oh, look, we got this Arden for the book cover, because I always like to get their feedback on it. My joy is when they sit here and say, oh, that rocks, it's awesome. And when they write back and say, that's not what that person looks like at all, then it's not nearly as much fun. But
no.
Yeah, so we work with them. I work with them in a limited degree. Obviously, the editors work with them in a much greater degree. But I do get the opportunity to work with them occasionally and have some fun, and we chat. Like I said, we do a lot of emails. So
I did just get a question on that from an author friend of mine. They said, how do they get it into be able to work with Wizards of the Coast? Do you guys have opportunities for authors to be able to work in your world?
That's an excellent question, one of which I don't know how to answer. I really don't, if it's an art question, I can answer it. But on that side, I don't have any understanding. I know that our editors used to sit here and take submissions for storylines and story options like that. I don't know if that's something they're still doing. If you go onto our website, you can often find out about submission details there.
Okay. So what he's saying is he's passing the buck and...
Yes, I am passing the buck to the website.
And to go ahead and obviously do your guys' homework and get on the website and find out a little more about what they're accepting right now. So that's the answer to that. Just do your homework and find out.
It's my great non-answer.
Available here. I think it's just trying to find out more about what your company does and what it does and what it does you. I see that you have 6,000 employees.
Do we? Wow, that's much bigger than I thought.
And that you have offices in 40 countries.
That we do, yes, all over the place.
So obviously you're also building brands or expanding brands in other countries to obviously because other countries have different likes and dislikes, and that's why you have different offices in other countries?
Well, it's a combination of things. It's sales, everything from sales offices to we have brands like Magic the Gathering where they have an international pro tour where they have competitions throughout the globe where people can sit here and compete to get to the pro tour and then get all the way down to the World Cup where they can sit here and vie for, I think last year they had like a $3 million purse or something crazy like that.
Wow.
And so we have offices over there in that regards and sales and whatnot. And so there's lots of different offices. We also have like Hasbro has the Hasbro Far East, which is our big production group over there in the Far East. And, just lots of different offices for lots of different reasons. So it just really kind of depends what's going on.
Wow. That's, like I said, your company's so diverse, so you guys just need to, get onto a website and find out all these different opportunities that they have in different countries. I know we have some people that listen in from Europe and also from London, England. So, hello, everyone. And I can't think of anything else at this point because that was the last one and that's the only one anybody's given me. And I'm running out of fodder here. Isn't that just awful?
Well, you have been talking for almost an hour. It's not that bad.
Yeah, this has been a little over an hour. And so I think that everyone's starting to move around here. But, I got to say some things. Obviously, we'll have more. As soon as I get off the phone, I'll say, oh, I should ask them that. And that's okay. I'll see you in a few weeks. So we'll definitely save that. The questions that we do get, we'll go ahead and put it on into a file. And that way, your interviewer during your particular hour and a half introduction on Saturday, we'll have something to ask you. So...
Sounds like fun.
Sounds like fun. So I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. And I said, I'll see you Thursday night on the 9th. And we'll just have some fun.
Sounds like a great time. I'm encouraging as many people as I can to come and attend and come hang out and have some fun.
Definitely. Again, with all the different varieties that Hasbro's in, you know, you guys with comic books, I mean, come on, you know, May's a big, huge month for comic books. So you got to come in and meet John and get into what's going on in that particular huge company. Bring lots of questions. There you go. That way we don't have to come up with them ourselves. So with that, I'm going to say goodnight, and I really appreciate your time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a couple of these questions, and that way you can answer them. One that you just brought up was a perfect one because we actually have a panel on that particular question.
Okay, great.
Isn't that funny? So I'll ask you that particular question, and that way I can, whatever your answers are, I'll go ahead and put that into the program book. So it'll be a few questions. And so with that, I'm going to wish you an awesome night and enjoy the rest of the evening, okay?
You as well, and thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, no, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. That was John and Wizards of the Coast. And we just wanted to let you know, again, Leprechaun is from the 9th through the 12th of May. Yes, I know for those in Phoenix, it's 2 weeks before Phoenix Comic Con. But still, we got some awesome things going on. We got the Phoenix, got the film festival there on Thursday night. And we're still accepting submissions for that. So definitely get a hold of me on Facebook. Or if you know Bob Nelson, he's helping run that. So definitely get a hold of him because he's taking submissions still for the film festival on Thursday night. And Friday night, we will have Meet the Pros right at the convention, which is going to be at the Mesa Marriott, right in the heart of Mesa. Also the same weekend as Make It a Second Friday, so you guys can, you know, have some fun over there and go on over to the Meet the Pros at 7 o'clock in the evening. We've got things going on from about 2 in the afternoon. I should know because I'm doing programming. And a lot of really cool panels and workshops and demos that you guys can be part of. Obviously, John's going to be there all weekend. He's staying until Sunday evening, and then he'll be leaving. Raymond Fawnin will be actually a little longer. So if you would like to meet these people, really need to get it, come on over. Also, as far as artists, we're talking about author Guest of Honor. We're going to have an interview with him next week, perhaps, working on that. John was so gracious to give us his time. Jack Medevitt is our author guest of honor, and he's coming in from Georgia. So we are very excited to have him. First time that he's actually been in Arizona for one of our cons, be the first. And, of course, I consider Jack one of the last real science fiction authors out there in that he doesn't write fantasy. He writes pure science fiction. So definitely need to come on out to Leprechaun and see what's going on because we got a lot of things. Obviously, leprechaun.com. Oh, I'm sorry. The website is leprechaun.org/LEP. That's LEP39. And that gets you directly into Leprechaun 39 website. Where all this, you know, all of our guests of honors are. And we've got, you know, Filk going on. We've got a lot of other things going on all weekend. And we'll also be doing the Geek Off competition. So if you are a member and wish to be a part of the Geek Off competition, to definitely sign up on Friday night. And we've got different challenges, a couple challenges on Saturday. And then another challenge on Sunday, and then we'll be kinging and quinging whoever wins the Giga competition. So it'll be kind of like the TBS competition, King of the Nerds. So it's in that kind of fun setting with different challenges. We've got the Lunar Rover Racing, which is a telepresence, and that's going on Saturday, so it'd be a lot of fun not only to try to get through the gauntlet using nothing but a monitor, but also being able to be a part of our first ever Geek Off competition. We've got media going on. That's all weekend, but specifically, obviously, for Thursday night. So come on over and have some fun. Next week, we've got another interview with Nathan Blackwell from Squishy Studios. Squishy Studios has brand new launch Voyage Trekkers, and their launch party is on the 30th of April, 6 p.m. here in Arizona. That's Voyage Trekkers, which is a webisode. Nathan from Squishy Studios. We have an interview with him at same time, same bad channel, Wednesday the 24th. So with that, I'm going to wish you guys a very good night, and I'm going to go have dinner. So hope to see you at any given opportunity. I'm all over the place all weekend, so hope to see you guys out there. This is KWAD Radio, and this is Patty Holstrand signing out.